from EWTN, the Global Catholic Network. This is EWTN News Nightly.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us. I'm Catherine Hadro. Our top story, even as the church mourns the passing of Pope Francis, the members of the College of Cardinals who have gathered in Rome announced when they will begin voting to choose his successor. The date is May 7th. That's a week from this Wednesday. It will begin with a Eucharistic celebration and then a procession into the Sistine Chapel. There, the largest conclave in church history, 134 cardinal electors from more than 70 countries will vote for the next pope. Meanwhile, in St. Peter's Basilica, masses continue to be celebrated for the repose of the soul of Pope Francis.
O Dio onnipotente, concedi al tuo servo.
Almighty God, grant your servant, our Pope Francis, to whom you entrusted the care of your family, to enter with abundant fruits from his apostolic labors into the joy of eternal life. Those are the words of the collect of today's Novendiales Mass, marking the third of 9 days of mourning in Rome. The first day was on Saturday, the day of Pope Francis's funeral. EWTN Vatican journalist Valentina Di Donato reports on the impact of that day.
The funeral of Pope Francis, 6 days after his death, a somber and beautiful goodbye to the Holy Father.
Oremus.
As mourners from around the world come together to pay their final respects to the Pope among people. That was how Cardinal Giovanni Battista Re, Dean of the College of Cardinals, described the Holy Father during the funeral mass at St. Peter's Square. A Pope attentive to the signs of the times and what the Holy Spirit was awakening in the Church. He said, recalling the Pope's mission to make the Church a home for all, especially society's most marginalized.
Rich in human warmth and deeply sensitive to today's challenges, Pope Francis truly shared the anxieties, sufferings, and hopes of this time of globalization. He gave of himself by comforting and encouraging us with a message capable of reaching people's hearts in a direct and immediate way.
A sea of people flooded St. Peter's Square. Hundreds of thousands turned out for the solemn event, marked by sacred music and a moving homily about the legacy of Pope Francis and his impact on the Church. Cardinals, bishops, priests, world leaders, and the faithful were equal in coming to remember the Pope who always reminded us that we all belong to the same human family. At his funeral, a hopeful sight. In a secluded corner near the entrance doors of the Basilica, the presidents of the U.S. and Ukraine spoke in hushed tones about reviving the efforts to end Russia's war with Ukraine. Pope Francis' pontificate is largely remembered for those pleas for peace. His global trips showed how close he was to those suffering the impact from one of the most unjust human-made disasters, war.
To me, he was always a source of inspiration. He was a good man, and it shows that even in high power, there can be good people, restoring faith in the system, you know. And I mean, to me, the religion is a core belief of mine. You know, it helps you get through tough times, and my belief of God really helped me through tough time.
That global reach Pope Francis made was even more evident at the funeral, according to young pilgrims here originally from the Jubilee of Teenagers.
Paying respects to the former Pope, he done a lot of great things, helped many people, children. He supported environment change, helping cancer awareness. I was sick once. It's really important to spread awareness. I thought I was invincible, but then I got sick. And now I'm here. I'm fortunate to be here.
I think it's important because it gathers around everyone from different nationalities, different age gaps, and they all come together to celebrate a very special moment, probably something that does not happen that often. I mean, through this we can remember how much the Pope did for everyone, especially to us youth.
And as Pope Francis left St. Peter's Basilica for the last time, some 150,000 people lined the streets to pay tribute to the Holy Father. In a historic procession, the coffin traveled in the Pope Mobile to the Basilica of St. Mary Major to be entombed. This is a shift in recent tradition. Pope Francis wanted to be buried there instead of the Vatican due to deep devotion to Mary and his wish to be accessible to the people. On Sunday, members of the College of Cardinals visited Pope Francis's tomb, and they gathered to pray Vespers, led by the Basilica's coadjutor, archpriest, Lithuanian Cardinal Rolandas Makrikas, allowing the faithful to take part. And according to the Vatican, an estimated 20,000 people had visited the tomb by the end of Sunday, drawing even more people to discover the ancient Marian shrine. In Rome, Valentina Di Donato, EWTN News Nightly.
As the Church prepares for a new pope, the College of Cardinals is holding meetings every day before the conclave begins. EWTN had the opportunity to catch up with several of them over the weekend.
Church needs first and for all to be close to the people, to be attentive to the real needs of the people, especially the poor. You remember? There was a cardinal who said to Francis once, he was, don't forget the poor. You know, all of us, we forget the poor. We are looking for a zone of comfort. Yeah? So don't forget that. That's the first one. Look at the reality. Be close to the people.
I hope we will have a pope who should be a father of the church. Even the word pope, papa, is father. So, and also a pastor. We need a pastor who takes care of the church, very close to the churches, and to visit the churches, to listen to the problems of the churches, but also a catechist who teaches faith, because there is a vacuum in Europe, no more values.
At today's meeting, 180 cardinals were present to help with the administration of the church. Just over 100 of them are electors who will vote for the next pope. Due to Pope Francis's death, the Jubilee year has continued under a modified schedule, including the Jubilee of Teenagers over the weekend.
It has a gigantic meaning behind it, and I never thought I'd really be here, because I had been here once before, but never thought I'd be here with a group of religious people and with all these people who have the same beliefs as me. I think it's really so important to have this type of family, found family behind, around you.
We've been Jubilee.
Here at the Jubilee, I'm having a great time. It's a spectacular experience that absolutely has to be lived.
It's important, in a way, with the next generation of the church. I would like to be a priest when I'm older, so forming and learning about the church and figuring out ways I can help and participate in mass and events.
I think it's nice to see young Catholics getting involved, and it's a great opportunity for young Catholics to get involved, yeah. So it's really amazing to be here, and it's great to see all the young people here as well.
Well, it means that the church is creating a place for young people, and I'm very grateful for it.
The canonization of Blessed Carlo Acutis was originally scheduled to be Sunday, but has been postponed. Still, thousands of teenagers were able to attend Pope Francis's funeral on Saturday and the second Novum Dialis Mass in his honor the following day, bringing joy to a city in mourning. On the eve of Divine Mercy Sunday and in thanksgiving for Pope Francis, the Sanctuary of St. John Paul II in Krakow, Poland, organized a special global event of prayer and music inspired by St. Faustina's words, the Symphony of Mercy. The prayer event was broadcast from Krakow and Divine Mercy shrines across six continents. The faithful joined in praying the Divine Mercy chaplet with a different part of the world, each leading a decade, and interwoven with a musical composition based on St. Faustina's writings. The event has been endorsed by Pope Francis as a call for peace and a powerful witness to God's mercy. There was a strong congressional showing at the Pope's funeral. Leadership in both the U.S. House and Senate sent Catholic lawmakers. 15 members secured the much sought-after spots to be in St. Peter's Square. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales talked with several of them and joins us with more. Eric?
Good evening, Catherine. A number of Catholic members put in requests to leadership to make the trek to Rome to join world leaders and other dignitaries. But in the end, a small delegation was picked to represent the U.S. Congress. 10 members in the House and 5 in the Senate. The leader of the Senate group was Catholic Senator Susan Collins.
The choir and the chants were absolutely extraordinary. It was a very moving experience. And I think it leaves us with the appreciation for the Pope's legacy.
Democratic Senator Dick Durbin also attended the funeral mass. He said, quote, "We must continue to hold fast to the message of Pope Francis to love and respect one another. In a world of hate and fear, Pope Francis's message of peace and understanding is needed now more than ever." The House delegation was led by Majority Leader Steve Scalise, who told me in a phone call it was a solemn ceremony.
When they brought the casket from inside of St. Peter's Basilica outside onto the steps, it drove it home how unique and serious of a ceremony it was.
Afterwards, members gathered for a photo and got a tour of St. Peter's and even had dinner with a cardinal who will be part of the conclave to choose the next pope. And what would Leader Scalise like to see in the next pope?
I'd like to see the church get back to its traditional Catholic roots. And, you pray for the wisdom of the cardinals that they make the right choice, because it's really important to the world who the leader of the church is going to be.
Others also took in many Catholic churches and shrines in Rome.
We're here to, obviously, for the funeral of Pope Francis, but an incredible time to be here in this holy city of Rome. Right now, where there's a lot of people that came here, not just for the funeral, but with the Jubilee year.
House Speaker Mike Johnson offered his condolences to Catholics around the world. He said Pope Francis was a leader who impacted the lives of countless people across the globe. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly, including crossing the line. The Trump administration pushes back over questions about its border policy. And after a record turnout among early voters, it's decision day in Canada. Welcome back. The White House declares America's borders are now secure, more than at any point in history. And border czar Tom Homan says he has the numbers to prove it. At the same time, the Trump administration's immigration policies continue to come under fire. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports.
Catherine, good evening. Take a look. The posters up and down the driveway behind me, the White House says, are images of the worst criminal illegal immigrants arrested since President Trump took office.
Border czar Tom Homan says President Donald Trump's policies are saving lives every day.
When President Trump has illegal immigration down 96%, when 96% less people are coming, how many women aren't being sexually assaulted by the cartels? How many children aren't dying making that journey?
Homan prays the men and women of the Border Patrol and ICE who are protecting national security and removing threats daily.
While you're all sleeping at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, there are men and women out there enforcing the law and making this country safe again. And we're going to keep doing it. It's full speed ahead.
But the Trump administration's immigration policies criticized as well. In Wisconsin, agents arrested a Milwaukee judge accused of helping a man evade immigration authorities.
There's no way that we would have treated a much more dangerous criminal the way we treated Judge Dugan. And that's what's essentially pathetic about this situation.
Meanwhile, more than 100 immigrants suspected of being in the U.S. illegally taken into custody during a raid at a nightclub in Colorado Springs. Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt also discussed the recent Operation Tidal Wave in Florida.
Nearly 800 illegal aliens were arrested during the first 4 days alone. Among those arrested were a Colombian murderer, alleged MS-13 and 18th Street gang members, and a Russian with a red notice for manslaughter.
And in recent days, federal authorities deporting young children who are U.S. citizens, along with their Honduran-born mothers, raising questions about who is being deported and whether the immigration crackdown has gone too far. But the Trump administration says it's keeping families together.
So when a parent says, I want my two-year-old baby to go with me, we made that happen. They weren't deported. We don't deport U.S. citizens. The parents made that decision, not the United States government.
The Trump administration is marking 100 days in office this week. Tom Homan today, the Treasury Secretary tomorrow, and later tomorrow, President Trump delivers remarks in Michigan. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Russian President Vladimir Putin has declared a 72-hour ceasefire in Ukraine for next week to mark Victory in Europe Day. The Kremlin says the truce will run from May 8th through May 10th to mark Moscow's defeat of Nazi Germany in 1945, and also urged Ukraine to follow suit. Ukraine is dismissing the move, saying if Russia truly wants peace, it must cease fire immediately. As we mentioned earlier, this follows the meeting between Presidents Trump and Zelensky at the Pope's funeral. The White House, which is trying to broker a peace deal, responded to the Kremlin's move.
I understand Vladimir Putin this morning offered a temporary ceasefire. The president has made it clear he wants to see a permanent ceasefire first to stop the killing, stop the bloodshed. And while he remains optimistic he can strike a deal, he's also being realistic as well. And both leaders need to come to the table to negotiate their way out of this.
This morning, thousands of Europeans woke up to no power. Regions of Spain, Portugal, and France were hit with a blackout, affecting airports, shops, and public transportation. Here are the cities across the Iberian Peninsula affected by the power outage, including parts of France. Subways were out of service, including phone lines, traffic lights, and ATMs. Crews have been working to restore power, saying it will take about 10 hours to fully restore all electricity. The cause of the power outage is still unknown. Turning now to Canada and an incredibly shocking event in Vancouver. During the Filipino festival on Saturday, an SUV rammed into a crowd, leaving at least 11 people dead and dozens more injured.
Just the sense of community that was destroyed by some senseless guy. It's just, I'm really mad and really angry about this whole situation.
Police are saying they do not believe this was in any way an act of terrorism. The suspect, a 30-year-old Vancouver resident, has been charged with multiple counts of murder and remains in custody. This comes as Canadians hit the polls this morning in an election largely overshadowed by tariffs, economic uncertainty, and suggestions from the White House that Canada could become the 51st U.S. state. Under new Prime Minister Mark Carney, the Liberal Party is seeking to extend its decade in power. Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre says Canada first. He wants to slash government funding, cut down on the country's bureaucracy, and get rid of environmental laws. A record 7.3 million Canadians cast ballots before Election Day. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, Praying for the Church, an initiative from the U.S. bishops and how you can join. Plus, it's the biggest study of the abortion pill ever, and its findings could shake the debate. The largest known study of the abortion pill released today says taking the pills leads to a serious health issue for about 1 in 10 women. The study from the Ethics and Public Policy Center is based on analysis of data from all payer insurance claims. It examined more than 865,000 prescribed mifepristone abortions from 2017 to 2023. The study says nearly 11% of women experience a serious adverse event within 45 days. They include sepsis, infection, and hemorrhaging. The probe is calling for the Food and Drug Administration to investigate mifepristone and to reinstate its earlier, stronger patient safety protocols. And the co-author of that study joins us now. Dr. Ryan Anderson is president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center. He co-authored the study with Jamie Brian Hall, the EPPC's director of data analysis. Ryan, thank you for joining us. First off, why did you do the study now, and did the findings surprise you?
Sure. So we did the study because women deserve to know the truth about chemical abortion and the safety risks of chemical abortion. The reason we did the study now was that the Trump FDA can take action to protect women's health and safety. Unfortunately, the Obama administration and then the Biden administration removed important safety protocols that the FDA had required when they approved the abortion pill. The findings of the study, we used an all-payer database of health insurance claims, over 850,000 chemical abortions. And the findings were a little startling. 10.93% of women who undergo a chemical abortion will experience a serious adverse event. That is not as safe as Tylenol, the way that we frequently hear from pro-abortionists. And women deserve to know the truth about this. The Trump administration should take action to protect women.
We mentioned to our viewers already some of the top findings from your analysis, but what stood out to you the most?
I mean, I think the most glaring thing that stood out was that the FDA label on the abortion pill says that it has less than 0.5% chance of a serious adverse event. Actual insurance data shows it's 10.93%. And women deserve to know the truth about what risks they're going to be putting themselves under when they receive this abortion drug. It's unsafe. It used to be required that you would have three different doctor visits during the administration of the pill. No longer the case. It's allowing telehealth. It's allowing mail order abortion pills. Doesn't even require a doctor to be prescribing the abortion pill. We saw, for political reasons, both the Obama and the Biden FDA eliminate these important safeguards. So we're calling on the Trump FDA to reinstate the original safety protections.
And just a follow-up on that, Ryan, are you optimistic the Trump administration will do so and reinstate those guardrails?
Of course, because look, both RFK, the entire Make America Healthy Again movement, the president, the vice president, they have said that they're not going to ban the abortion pill, but they have said that they want it to be safe. At least safe for women, specify who is going to be safe, because sadly, it always kills the baby when it's effective. But unfortunately, our data shows that it's not even always effective. So it's both unsafe for women. It's not effective. And so we're hopeful that the Trump administration will do the right thing here and reinstate those safety regs.
Speaking of that hope, you've said that women deserve to know this information. And given this latest research, do you think it will change hearts and minds for people who still say the abortion pill is as safe as Tylenol?
Look, the ideologue, it's hard to reason with someone that didn't reason themselves into their position in the first place. There is no reason to think that this drug is as safe as Tylenol. We're seeing in the insurance claims database here, people have sepsis, people have hemorrhaging, people have to go to the ER because of the chemical abortion drugs. And this is why it's appropriate now for the Trump administration to take action.
Ryan Anderson, president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center and co-author of an extensive study revealing the dangers of the abortion pill. Ryan, thank you.
Thank you.
Before we leave, we'd like to remind you that it is the Novum Dialis, the 9 days of mourning for the loss of Pope Francis, and there is a special novena for this time. The U.S. Bishops' Conference has published this novena in memory of Pope Francis. Today is day three. If you'd like to pray this novena along with the church, you can find it on usccb.org. We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Catherine Hadro. Good night, and God bless.